If this one guy gets hit by a bus, the world's software will come crashing down. It'll all fall apart. It's a funny statement. We've heard this statement before. We've seen comics and memes all about this statement. But here's the thing. The reality is far, far worse. Far, far more terrifying than that simple, already mildly terrifying statement suggests. I wrote an article about this that I just posted over at the Lunduke Journal. I'm going to read it to you now because it's incredibly important. And I've got so much to say that I just couldn't fit in the article. You can feel free to read along over at lunduke.locals.com if you like. Two questions. How many critical software packages are maintained by a small unpaid team, or worse, a single person? And what happens when that person gets bored with the project or decides to do something malicious, as is happening already with the case of the recent backdoor in the XZ compression tool, or gets hit by a bus? These are not only fair questions to ask, but critical as well. The reality is that we're not simply talking about a handful of key software packages here. The entirety of our modern computing infrastructure is built on top of thousands of projects, from software packages to online services, that are built, maintained, and run entirely by a single person, or if we're lucky, two or three people. One wrong move and the Jenga tower, the precarious Jenga tower that is modern computing, comes crashing down. Most of us have seen this comic from XKCD, which shows all of our modern digital infrastructure precariously perched and perfectly balanced, and everything is just so. But down there, close to the bottom, is a project some random person in Nebraska has been thanklessly maintaining since 2003. And that is true. But it doesn't really show you the full problem. And just to give you an idea of how widespread and dire that this situation truly is, I would like to call your attention to two projects that most people don't even think about. We don't even remember they're there half the time, but that are critical to nearly every computer system in use today. The first is the TZ database. A lot of you are like, what the fart is the TZ database? Well, dealing with time zones in software can be a bit tricky. Anyone who's ever handled dates and whatnot in time zones knows what I'm talking about. There are many rules and many time zone details all across the world. It gets crazy. As luck would have it, a standard database, the TZ database, was built to make it easier for software packages to get those details right. And every time those time zone details across the world are changed, something, which a lot of you are like, well, time zones are set in stone. No, time zones change all the time, oftentimes several times per year, and this is not a joke. Sometimes with only a few days' notice. A lot of you are like, that's not that can't possibly. It is. Laws get passed that modify minute but important details relating to time zones, oftentimes days before the event occurs, before the change will need to be implemented. This is totally a real thing. I provide a link there to an instance where the Debian team noticed it, filed a bug about it, and had a little email thread out where they're like, what the heck do we do? It is crazy. Well, those databases, they need to be updated. Updated fast, perfectly. There's no room for any error here. Now, what happens if those details are not updated? What happens if the time zone details data is incorrect? Well, at best, we have a few minor scheduling inconveniences, right? Because if the time zone detail is off, well, maybe your computer or device or server won't be right with whatever time it's actually supposed to be. At worst, it's absolute mayhem computer-wise. I mean, it's anarchy. I'm not overstating it. Times can be significantly out of sync between systems here, which means that can mess up not only scheduling, which is an obvious issue, and I don't just mean your calendar. I mean scheduling of backup jobs, of data synchronization, and like, let's say the financial industry, they will have throughout the day very carefully coordinated times set up, like in cron jobs, to sync data at very specific moments in order for other tasks to kick off with known data, right? Well, if those times all get out of sync across different systems in different time zones, you could have real problems from a financial institution perspective. But it gets worse than that. It gets way worse than that, because we can talk about security problems, because many encryption tools, including SSL and many others, require closely synced time. So the time needs to be accurate or errors a start a flying and system security goes into the toilet. That's not a joke. That's a real thing. And it's crazy that that's a real thing, but it is. And to give you an idea of how widespread the TZ database is, here is just a tiny fraction of the number of software projects which rely upon it. Again, this is a small number of the total number of projects that use this database. Every BSD system, FreeBSD, OpenBSD, as well as every Unix system I know of semi-modern ones, including Solaris and the like, macOS and iOS, Linux, Android, Microsoft does not. Interestingly, Microsoft maintains their own database. Java, PHP, Perl, Ruby, Python, JavaScript, PostgreSQL, Mongo Database, Microsoft SQL Server. I know. Yeah, it's basically, this is a list of all software with a few minor exceptions. And that's just a sample of the software which heavily relies on the TZ database for making sure that timing and everything that is time critical in all of computing is correct. Now, with something this absolutely critical, right? We're talking mission critical stuff here. Core mission critical, getting the time right upon which layers of everything else is built. Surely a highly paid team of people from multiple companies is responsible for keeping it updated, right? Oh no. Oh heavens no. Oh my gosh, no. It's two people. It's two people and it's not their job. They're volunteers. Two volunteers keep the time of the whole world a ticking. That's not a joke. That's a real thing. While the database itself has been officially published by ICANN, the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers, so it gets put on the ICANN servers for the last few years, only two people actually maintain the TZ database. So they were originally, the TZ database was published independently, but they needed a little help doing so. So the folks, and there were some lawsuits and whatnot. It was crazy. But the folks at ICANN stepped in and handled the publishing on the server. But these two same people, they're still publishing this. They're still updating the TZ database. It's crazy. Two people. Two. Let's move on to one other example here, and that is SQLite. This one is fascinating to me. Did you know that SQLite is the most used database system in the entire world? By far. More than MySQL, more than Microsoft SQL Server, Postgres, all of it combined. Good on SQL. SQLite is more used on more systems than all database systems in the world combined. In fact, SQLite is a critical component of the following systems: Android, iOS, macOS, Windows, Firefox, Chrome, Safari, most, if not pretty close to all, set-top boxes, smart televisions, an absolutely insane number of individual software packages, Dropbox and iTunes. If you sneeze, your snot and spit is probably going to hit a piece of software that uses SQLite in some way. You know what's crazy here? There's good odds that SQLite, if you were to create a list of the top 10 pieces of code that are used throughout the world, SQLite's probably on it. It's probably top 5. SQLite is everywhere. Everywhere. It is a cornerstone of modern computing. People maybe take it for granted, but it is everywhere. Now, you're ready for the fact that you knew was coming. SQLite is maintained by three guys. That's totally true. Three dudes. Three dudes maintain SQLite. Three. Yeah. We're not talking about three lead developers who oversee an army of open source contributors here. No. Just three guys. Total. And they don't accept public patches or fixes. It's open source. But they don't, like, if you were like, well, I want to contribute to the project, you know what the answer to that is? No. It's just those three guys. Three guys build, design, fix and maintain and ship one of the, if not the most used piece of software on planet earth. Companies build their entire business with sometimes without knowing it on top of SQLite. It's crazy how little attention this thing gets. Now I'm going to read this to you because this is amazing. SQLite is open source, meaning that you can make as many copies of it as you want and do whatever you want with those copies without limitation. But SQLite is not open contribution. Yeah, they don't allow any contributions back. Now, a piece of software that is practically the cornerstone of modern computing, with trillions of dollars worth of systems relying upon it, every second of every day, three guys. It's nuts. It's nuts. Now, I want to talk about how corporations respond to all this for a second, because I think this is important. Let's add those two projects together, the TZ database and SQLite. Five dudes in total are responsible for the time zones and SQLite databases, right? The time your computer has and the database structure that runs the vast majority of local software on your machines, five dudes. Yeah. Software and data used on practically every computer on the planet. And that's just the tip of the iceberg here. Critical projects, often with small teams of, more often than not, unpaid volunteers, form the core of the vast majority of the software projects, including commercial ones. Heard of things like Image Magic, which is for manipulating, adding effects to, and converting images? The XZ. Everyone's heard of XZ now for compression. So many things are built on top of that. FFmpeg. For converting and compressing videos. You'll find those at the heart of more systems than you can count. Good odds you use all three of those projects every day and may not even ever notice it, ever. And a small team, and as the small team behind FFmpeg recently pointed out on a Twitter post, an X post, getting those large corporations to contribute in any meaningful way can be like pulling teeth. I'm going to read this quote to you. This is from the FFmpeg team directly. This is amazing. The XZ fiasco has shown how dependencies on unpaid volunteers can cause major problems. Trillion-dollar corporations expect free and urgent support from volunteers. Microsoft Teams posted on a bug tracker full of volunteers that their issue is high priority. So this happened. So the folks behind Microsoft Teams, right, which uses FFmpeg, again, Microsoft being fully reliant on the open source volunteer driven FFmpeg, posted the following, a bug ticket to FFmpeg. Hi, this is a high priority ticket and the FFmpeg version is currently used in a highly visible project in Microsoft. We have customers experience issues with caption during Teams live event, please help. Okay, poor grammar aside, they continue. This is the FFmpeg people continuing. After politely requesting a support contract from Microsoft for long-term maintenance, they offered a one-time payment of a few thousand dollars instead. This is unacceptable. We didn't make it up. This is what Microsoft actually did. I provide the link to the bug track so you can go read it for yourself. The lesson from the XZ fiasco is that investments in maintenance and sustainability are unsexy and probably won't get a middle manager their promotion, but pay off a thousandfold over many years. But try selling that to a bean counter. In short, Microsoft wanted to benefit from the free work done by FFmpeg in a product making millions and plus of dollars, but was only willing at most to toss a few peanuts at the team. And even then, that mildly insulting offer of meager support was only done when Microsoft was critically needed that assistance. This is not unusual. I have a few parting thoughts that I've written in this article, and then a lot more that I just couldn't fit in here. There are valuable lessons to be learned from all this, including the need for real, meaningful support by large corporations of the projects they rely so heavily upon for multiple reasons. But for now, I'd like to leave you with a few observations. Number one, corporations don't hesitate to throw extraordinarily large sums of money at tech trade organizations like the Linux Foundation, which brings in hundreds of millions of dollars every year from companies like Microsoft. Yet, they, meaning the corporations, are hesitant to provide significant funding to projects they rely on directly to ship their own highly profitable products. See the projects listed earlier in this article. How many commercial projects sit on top of FFmpeg and ImageMagick and SQLite and the TZD and on and on and on? Number two, how many of these smaller projects, which Linux desktops and servers rely entirely upon, receive regular funding from the Linux Foundation or companies which fund the Linux Foundation? I'll answer that question for you: next to none. Go ahead, go look up all these different projects and ask them. Think about this. Sit down and think about all of the miniature little open source projects that power Linux desktops, FreeBSD desktops. Heck, the open source stuff that powers your macOS desktop. Think about it. There's a lot of them in there. Go ask the project maintainers of those projects how much funding they got from Microsoft or the Linux Foundation or Apple or Amazon or Google. And you, by and large, the answer will be zero, not a zip. Occasionally, and it's a rare blue moon scenario, you'll find that a few peanuts got tossed their way one time. That's it. There's multiple issues with this. But three, even high-profile open-source projects like KDE or GNOME struggle to bring in enough funding to even afford two full-time developers on payroll. I linked to an article I wrote about a year back where I dug through the financial records of 20 or so of the most visibly prominent open-source foundations. And when you look at the amount of money that GNOME and KDE bring in, we're talking like $200,000 in a year. People don't realize that. So Red Hat Enterprise Linux, SUSE Linux Enterprise, Canonical with Ubuntu, big companies. I mean, we're talking IBM here, Oracle even, ship the GNOME desktop as default on their systems that bring in billions of dollars. Look at Red Hat Enterprise. How much money do they give to the GNOME Foundation in response to using GNOME as the primary interface for their billions of dollars of revenue? Well, the GNOME Foundation brings in a grand total of $200,000-ish in any given year most of the time, so it ain't much. Now, in Red Hat's defense, they do somewhat contribute back to the GNOME project. They do. But look at the funding, it's almost nothing. And that's one of the few examples, very few, where a corporation gives back in any way to the open source project that they're built upon. And even then, it's pitiful. Number four, a fourth thing I would like to talk about, then we're going to go into some additional things that really drive me nuts. We've avoided catastrophe thus far through absolute dumb luck. The recent XZ backdoor, for example, was found by a lone developer who happened to notice a half second, 0.5 second slowdown, and happened at that moment to have some free time and some interest and some experience to be able to investigate the matter further. The odds of that being discovered before significant harm was done, oh man, they were slim. This is dumb luck. Now let's go take a look at that XKCD comic at the beginning of this article again, right? Right? Look at this. Look, I mean, that's funny. That's funny. All modern digital infrastructure sits on top of a little precariously balanced peg that is some random project that some random person in Nebraska has been randomly thanklessly maintaining since 2003. It's funny. However, where was I at here? However, you know what's really terrifying? The reality is far more precarious. There's not simply one project by one guy holding all of modern computing up. There's thousands of projects, each of them made by one guy. And hundreds of those projects, at least, are load-bearing. Now, what do I mean by that? I mean that they are critical. They are extremely base-level, hypercritical to the existence of many commercial products, of many computer systems, online systems, software packages in the works. They're load-bearing. If someone wanted to sneak in something malicious, easy. If someone gets hit by a bus, would it be, is there anyone ready to jump in and take over? No. No, there's not. Dumb luck only lasts for so long. And we have hundreds, if not thousands, of these projects that are load-bearing, that are holding up Windows and macOS and iOS and Android and your Linux desktops and free BSD systems and the vast majority of online servers and everything else that's out there. One of them gets hit, the whole thing comes down. Five of them get hit, we are screwed. Now, the potential here for the hits is many and varied, right? I mean, let's be honest here. Some of these projects, if the maintainers get taken out, it's not necessarily a problem immediately, right? It's if all of a sudden the maintainers are like, I'm done, or they pass away or something, okay, we can limp along and hopefully come up with a backup plan over the coming weeks and months before things start to get critical and the need for additional patches becomes really imminent. Okay, so those ones, maybe they're not load-bearing. At least not immediately. Like we can watch the pillar start to crumble and hopefully reinforce it in time. But some of them, like the TZ database, for example, oftentimes it has to get updated in a matter of 2 or 3 days. Okay, so we have a very limited amount of time before things start to go extremely, extremely wrong. What happens with a lot of these systems, a lot of them, if someone decides to insert some malicious code? Now, I have every reason to believe that those MySQL guys are pretty upstanding, right? They've earned my trust over the years. So I'm going to speak hypothetically here, and I don't mean anything negative against the SQL guys. Or sorry, not the MySQL, the SQLite guys. SQLite guys, I have trust in them. However, what happens if they decide, you know what? I don't have a skull-shaped volcano island and I want to become a supervillain. Their software is everywhere. They don't allow outside contributions. Could they have already inserted malicious code into SQLite that's been shipping for years now? Yeah. Yeah, they could. Do you know the code for SQLite inside and out and can say definitively that there is no malicious code in there? Can you do that? I don't know a single human being that can, and I know a lot of developers that work on database systems. Now, again, I don't think the SQLite guys have done that. I genuinely don't. But there's so many projects along those lines. Is there a code where at some date it's going to say, insert a code or we're going to hold your data hostage? Go send money to this Bitcoin address and we'll give you the code. Is that in there? I don't know. I don't know if it is or not. Is it in compression tools? Is it in Image Magic? Is it in FFmpeg? I don't know. I don't know that. Was it in XZ? Yeah. Yeah, there was a backdoor in XZ. Put there intentionally. If you would have asked the same you, the same question a month ago, is there a backdoor that was maliciously put in there in your compression tools that ship on your Linux servers? Would you have said yes or no? Well, it was there. So is it in SQLite? Is it in FFmpeg? I don't know. I don't know. There's so many potentials here, potentialities for not just malicious activity, but screw-ups, but for people with specific domain knowledge to die or lose interest or get poached by a company or something. And what amazes me is how little companies and organizations regard all of this. How much investment does Apple make into SQLite and FFmpeg and the DZ database? I don't know of any. How much image investment does Microsoft make into FFmpeg and all these other things that they rely upon? Little to none. How much does the Linux Foundation, that is really reliant on not just the Linux kernel, but the whole ecosystem of software, how much do they actually give to the projects? They have hundreds of millions coming in. Hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars every year. How much of that goes to SQLite, to GNOME, to KDE, to the TZ database guys? Well, either zero or close to zero in all of those cases. Now, you'd think if you were making hundreds of millions of dollars or billions or trillions of dollars, you would think, you know what? If I'm making $1 trillion this year, maybe I should toss a few coins to the one volunteer dude that my entire company is propped up by. I mean, seriously, just from a business continuity standpoint, if there's one dude in Nebraska or wherever that do something malicious and take out your company and your flagship product, you haven't done your job. I don't understand legitimately why Microsoft and Google and Apple and Oracle and Canonical and IBM and all the others haven't gone around and said, man, we are reliant on, like, they identified, like, let's say 100. These 100 projects that are run by one dude, oh my word, we need those. Like, if we don't have those, our cash cow of Red Hat Enterprise or SQL Server or Android or what have you is screwed. Why don't they go down and say, you know what? Our competitors are reliant on them too. Let's buy them. Metaphorically speaking, let's go in and say, hey, SQLite, hey, FFmpeg. Why doesn't Microsoft go to FFmpeg and say, we want to do a support contract with you. We're going to pay you $500,000 every year so you can hire multiple dedicated developers and support personnel and rely upon that money. Microsoft has now created a situation where they get not only world-class support, but they begin to control the future of the project, right? Because if the project is now becoming reliant upon those funds in the future, they're going to make sure Microsoft is happy, which means Microsoft could steer the project in a direction that will benefit Microsoft more than their competitors. And they win goodwill along the way. I don't understand why these companies aren't essentially in a bidding war to try and outspend on these tiny little projects that their entire business is propped up on. Instead, Microsoft and Google and so many others, they go to these projects and they yell at them. They do. That's what Microsoft just did to FFmpeg. They go and they're like, oh, geez, free volunteers. We make $1 billion off of our product and there's a bug in your code. Oh my God. And they throw a little temper tantrum and hissy fit when these free volunteers don't immediately start fixing the bug that Microsoft needs fixed for their $1 billion of revenue. And then when they're like, man, you get a support contract, they're like, well, we'll give you like $1,000. Like, I mean, come on. Oh, holy heavens. Are you kidding me? Instead of buying goodwill and buying control of the project and therefore controlling their own destiny, Microsoft's own destiny, Microsoft is pissing off the people that build the thing, the foundation of their own products. That's insane. That is the stupidest business strategy I can possibly imagine. It's crazy town. That is crazy town. And all of these major companies are doing this exact same thing. They all are. IBM's doing it. Red Hat's doing it. Canonical's doing it. The Linux Foundation brings in all these hundreds of millions of dollars. And they do give they do funnel more funding into a variety of open source projects, but they're all very high level, big corporate focused, you know, high uptime Kubernetes cluster type things. Not these little things. Not the things that everything is based on. Not the foundation. They ignore the foundation of Linux. It's crazy. Absolutely crazy. I wanted to bring everyone's attention to this because holy heavens, it's nuts. The situation we have ourselves in is beyond terrifying. Realistically, if you're really looking at it, we're not concerned about one guy. We're concerned about one guy 1,000 times over. The fact that it all hasn't come crashing down is dumb luck. More luck than anything else. It is going to happen. There are ways to mitigate it, but no major foundation, no major corporation, or anyone else seems actually concerned with really mitigating it. Everyone's just going around wringing their hands about, oh, the XZ backdoor, you know, we got to work on supply chain for open source things and reproducible. But like, okay, there's certain things that, yeah, okay, we could do a little bit better. But the core problem here is this. And unless we address this, and there's a lot of ways to address it, and I'm not saying that I personally want all these big mega corporations coming in and buying up all these little projects. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying if I were the corporations, that's what I would do to fix it for myself. But there are ways to fix this, and no, the first step is to admitting we have a problem. And we got a big problem here. It's a big, big friggin' problem. All right, everybody. Thank you. Thank you for putting up with me on this. Go to lunduke.com. Lunduke.com takes you what's called Lunduke Journal Link Central. And it literally is just a flood of links of where you can get audio podcast RSS feeds, every Linux sucks video along with like Mac OS sucks and everything else, the big back catalog of articles, DRM-free PDFs, links on how to become a whistleblower to the Lunduke Journal. We occasionally will publish leaked materials outside of big corporations like Microsoft and IBM and Red Hat and the like. And I provide some details on how to effectively do that while maintaining anonymity for yourself, because that is important. And there's all sorts of links there, where to follow, how to email, all that good stuff. And if you want to support the Lunduke Journal, which we greatly appreciate, because the Lunduke Journal does not take any money from big tech at all. Really, we don't take money from any tech or anyone except for you. Only subscribers and contributors and donators to the Lunduke Journal. That is how we keep the lights on and keep doing this work. So you can grab a monthly or yearly subscription. There's subscriptions that we call the triple pass to all three sites, the political, the entertainment, and the tech, which is fantastic. You can get a lifetime pass to all of it in case you really, really hate having recurring monthly or yearly subscriptions. You can just get a lifetime pass and support the work of the Lunduke Journal without ever having to pay things on a recurring basis. You can make donations, just little one-time donations. And you can also pay with Bitcoin, which we make as an option for the people who prefer to pay as Bitcoin or who, for whatever reason, just generally don't like to use, you know, credit cards or debit cards or all those sorts of things. And because the transaction fees are a little bit lower on Bitcoin, if you get a lifetime subscription, I cut a few dollars off of the total cost. It's a little bit cheaper if you do it with Bitcoin. I pass the savings on to you, because why not? Anyway, so thank you to everyone who helps to make this possible. I really couldn't do this without you. Every day, the Lunduke Journal is trying to be censored and silenced by our competitors, by big tech corporations. If it's a day that ends in Y, YouTube is trying to get rid of us off of YouTube. It's just a regular ongoing thing. And the only reason we are able to continue publishing all of this is because of the support from all of you. So thank you. From the bottom of my heart, you are amazing. All right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, nerds and nerdettes across the inner tubes, I do declare, end broadcast.